Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast. We are super excited that you're here listening in. My name is Andrew, and I am thrilled to be sitting here with Tim Elmore, our thought leader. And Tim, I'm really excited about getting this thing going.
Thanks, Andrew. Well, I don't know so much about a thought leader. I do have thoughts, but I'm not always leading with those thoughts. Let me real quick take a minute for the listeners to introduce you, because you're a new voice on this podcast. Andrew McPeak is a friend. We've known each other for a bit, but we ask you to come on this team as a millennial, but as a content provider, a writer, an editor, and really a thinker yourself. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun, both in blogs, but also in this podcast, where we've got me, this aged veteran. I don't even know if veteran's the right word, but with
like
you as
aged,
a millennial.
Though.
Yeah, aged. Yeah, seasoned. So we're going to have some fun. And I am looking forward, Andrew, to you leading this conversation today about this very important topic.
Yeah, I am too. So let's jump into it. I'm really excited. Our topic today, 5 new insights on today's teens and young adults. The exciting thing about this is that this is really coming out of a new book that's just been released. And it's Generation IY, our 5th anniversary edition. It is chocked full of new features and content. So we're going to dive into some of the new bits that are in there, the 5 insights, so to speak. But I really want to start off kind of getting a taste for what is this book, maybe even for especially for people who haven't read the original version that released 5 years ago. So maybe in 30 seconds, you want to just describe to start off with, who is Gen IY? Where did that name come from? Why are we talking about this?
Absolutely. Thanks, Andrew. Well, for 15 years now, we've been reading about the millennial generation. Howe and Strauss put out the book in the year 2000, Millennials Rising. And from that point on, there were articles, books, social scientists everywhere around the world were talking about these young people. But they were called millennials or Generation Y. I began to feel about 6 or 7 years ago that the second half of Generation Y was different than the first half. So those 90s kids looked different than the 80s kids, even though they were all a part, technically, of the same generation. So Generation IY is simply a term we're using to describe the second half of Gen Y, the kids born since 1990. I like to add very often, 1991 was a year where more children were born in America than any year in our history. So loads of these young adults now are gracing companies and colleges and trying to figure out adult life. And sometimes they're not transitioning very well. So we want to help a parent, a coach, a teacher, a dean, a principal, really help these kids become the best version of themselves.
That's awesome.
And one more thought. I would say Generation I was a term that describes not only the second half of Gen Y, but in many ways the features of the first half of Gen Z, which we'll get into in this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the amazing thing is, and we've had a lot of people talk about it. I myself remember when that book came out in 2010, it was very influential for me as I was thinking about, okay, what generation am I a part of? What's our legacy going to be? But what I'm finding is people are talking about millennials more now than they even were 5 years ago. And it felt like in some ways that necessitated us saying, we need a 5th anniversary edition. We need the new research that's coming out. So I wonder if you could speak to what was the idea behind creating this? What kinds of things are people who maybe have already read Gen IY, what are they going to get out of this new version?
It's a great question. And we get questioned all the time, particularly by publishers that say, why would you release a 5th anniversary? Usually it's a 10th anniversary you would want to do. But if you stop and think about it, this is a research-based book. So much has happened in just 5 years between 2010 and 2015 that we felt like we owed it to the readers to not give them an older copy of a book and say, oh, by the way, sorry, these are old stats. We wanted to give them fairly fresh data. So we dug up from Pew and Harris and others research, and we're in this book trying to help them interpret it. That's the value we think it adds. We're not doing a lot of primary research, but we're helping the parent or the teacher really interpret who are these newest kids, how are they different. So there are more stories in this book, Andrew.
That's great.
More statistics. There's 2 brand new chapters, and one of them we actually dig into what's the first generation of Gen Z.
That's
these
great.
Kids born since 9/11, and they have grown up in a very different world than that kid born in 1990 where everybody got the new phone and everything was great in the economy. Well, now everything's not great in the economy. So How does that mold our kids? That's what we get into in this book.
That's great. That's great. And so one last question. I was actually talking to a parent a couple of days ago, and they're looking at a parenting book, and they're looking at Generation IY, and they say, hey, what's the difference? I think most of our listeners are going to be familiar with self-help books or a parenting book. And you yourself have been a thought leader on that parenting side for a long time. But I wonder if you could speak to what is the importance of a research-based book when we're talking about generations. We know that it has a place, but I wonder if you could speak to why was it necessary that this book be released and have the content that it does?
Yeah, well, I think it's of utmost importance. And I want to hasten to add, I don't think I'm the only one that could write this. There's certainly brilliant people out there writing great stuff and helping adults understand kids. I believe what we have tried to do and the importance of a research-based book is that we're not just conjecturing about our world. We're saying here's nationwide statistics. In some of the chapters, here's global statistics on these kids. So based on reality, not I think this might be true about my neighborhood, we're saying here's what to do with this data. So if nothing else, a person could read this book and say, I didn't know that about gaming, for instance, in Korea or whatever. And now what do we do with it as the people who are teaching, leading, and parenting this batch of kids?
That's great. And that's great. So in a lot of ways, it seems like it's forming the core foundation of what Growing Leaders is doing all over. Yeah,
we want it to be. You hear me use this term, Andrew, around our office. We want to be pracademic.
Yeah.
Extremely practical. Here's what you need to do, but based on academic research. So we feel like that's just an important addition to make, and that is the foundation for why we exist.
That's hugely important. Thank you so much for sharing. So we said pracademic. Let's get to that practical side.
Okay.
Talk about some insights, some things that people are going to find in this book. And I wonder if you could start by setting the scene for us, which is actually an acronym that you use in the book, kind of a new addition. So set the scene for us. What kind of scene, what kind of, environment is this generation growing up in?
Great question. Well, I think most adults that I talk to who are coaches, teachers, or parents that have the next generation around them at least have moments of frustration. And they're not ragging on the kids, but they're just going, I don't get these kids. Why don't they have discipline? Why don't they have a work ethic? Why don't they have values like I did? My generation had values, you know, that sort of thing. And we start doing this old-timer talk to our kids. It's a lecture, and the kids go, I don't need that. I don't want that. So with this acronym, Andrew, it's something I came up with since the original version of the book. I simply take the word scene. I call this the Generation IY scene, and I spell the word scene, S-C-E-N-E. And if our listeners can imagine two columns, just imagine two columns in your head. Off to the left, I've written the word scene because I think these letters aptly describe five characteristics of the world these kids have grown up in.
Okay.
Then off to the right, I'm going to give the unintended consequences of that scene, the things we didn't see coming. And I think if I just describe this right now, any listener is going to say, oh my, of course they think the way they do. Look at the world we gave them to grow up in. So let's jump in. And I want you to volley back your thoughts on this. The letter S in the word scene reminds me their world is full of speed. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, it's high-speed internet access and nothing less. It's Instagram, it's ATMs, it's fast food, everything's quick.
Absolutely.
But if I grew up in a world of speed, I can assume that slow is bad. And again, if I've never had to navigate too many things that are slow, I'm not good at slow. Well, you and I both know in the adult world, some things are slower than you like.
Absolutely.
The letter C in scene, their world is full of convenience. In fact, our world is full of convenience. We all love the conveniences of our modern day world. But if I grew up in a world of convenience, I can assume that hard is bad. And I often remind teachers this when I do conferences. The number one phrase that K-12 educators say they hear from students today is, this is too hard. Mm. As if they can level a judgment against their educator.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Crazy.
As an 8-year-old.
Exactly. In the second grade, this is too hard. Give me something easier here. Yeah. The letter E in scene reminds me their world is full of entertainment. And I like to add, it's in our hands now. Absolutely. You know, we have this smartphone that can give us ESPN scores and email and websites and so forth. But if I grew up in a world of entertainment, if that's all I've ever known, I can assume that boring is bad. And of course, boring has never been good for a teenager, but now it's like they can't even navigate that.
Yeah.
And I like to add that neuroscientists today have told us it is in times of boredom where we have margins in our day that we actually develop empathy. Well, I think that's a crucial characteristic to develop. But absolutely. If I got noise and clutter coming at me all the time, do I have time to develop that or space in my mind? I don't. Mm. The letter N in seen reminds me their world is full of nurture. Now, certainly not all of them. Some kids have grown up in a very difficult environment. But in middle class in America and above, we have nurtured these children. Some say we've coddled them.
Absolutely.
You know, helmets on them at dinner time. I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's almost that bad.
Yeah.
If I grew up in a world of nurture, I mean, I can easily assume risk is bad. I don't want to take any risks. I don't want to fail or fall. And mama's made sure I've never failed or fought. Well, this is a generation of kids that want to be entrepreneurs. But, you know, with entrepreneurship, I'm going to have to take some risks. So we better prepare them for risk, which we have not done the first 18 years of their life. Okay, and then one more letter. The last E in seen reminds us that some of them, not all of them, have grown up in a world of entitlement.
Mm.
I deserve this just because I'm here. And if I grew up in a world of entitlement, I can easily assume that labor is bad. I shouldn't have to work for this. It should come to me. Well, I don't mean to paint in broad brushstrokes here and be oversimplifying. However, if you think about those words I just described on the right-hand column in your brain, the words slow, hard, boring, risk, and labor, it dawned on me once, aren't those the very elements that grow me into a good adult, into a good husband, a good father, a good dad?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm simply saying our culture today that's full of speed and convenience, which we all love, nobody wants to trade it in, simply removes the components that would naturally develop life skills in me. That's why we have to be more intentional. I'm not saying give up. I'm saying let's get more intentional as we develop these kids.
Yeah, that's great. That's really great. Yeah, that's one thing that I think about. You know, we've talked about millennials. There's really a field of study for millennials that wasn't present in past generations.
Yeah.
And I feel like a big part of the reason for that is we are having to be far more intentional than we have with any other generation, especially as we're seeing millennials enter the workforce, which is something that's happened much more since the 5 years that you originally released this book.
Andrew, if I could volley back on that, I think the balance we have to walk as adults is, on the one hand, we might look at our parents or grandparents who just said, I just let you go outside and play with sticks and balls and trees. And, you know, so there's a let it happen element we do need. But the intentionality comes when we realize I'm letting my child just do whatever, and it may be gaming for 6 hours. Well, that may not develop a well-rounded, emotionally healthy child. So in one sense, we need to let life happen. We need to let them skin their knee, if you will. But on the other hand, we've got to be very deliberate when we see skill sets that are undeveloped and ought to be developed by age 15 or 20.
Yeah, it seems that parenting has always been a balancing act, but it might be even more so now than it ever has been.
I think you're right. Yeah,
that's great. Awesome. So let's get on to insight number two. And this is one of the things I love. So much of our world happens without us noticing it. And I think each generation faces first things or new things. They grow up with something different than their parents grew up with. But that has never been more true than with Generation IY. So I wonder if you could speak to what are the firsts that Generation IY has grown up with that's kind of an assumed part of their nature that maybe past generations aren't even noticing.
Yeah. Well, it is true. We need to remember every generation grew up with first. I remember as a kid born in the late 50s, we grew up with a one-eyed babysitter, the television, you know?
Yeah.
And it was really scary because, you know, Andy Griffith is on TV or I Love Lucy, you know, oh my gosh, culture was seeping into the living room. But today it is more so than ever. I mean, with websites and phones, wherever I am that I can get anything on that phone, parents just need to know there are some firsts. And one of the reasons we might get frustrated is we didn't grow up in a world like them. So simply replicating what was done in history is not enough. So I'll give you a few examples.
Okay.
I won't do all of them, but let me just give you a few. First of all, I love to note that these kids today are the first generation that doesn't need adults to get information.
Yeah.
So, you know, we used to be the leaders because we were the ones that knew it and nobody else knew it. But that's not true now. Thank you, Google. They don't need us for information. But I always like to point out to the adult, they do need us for interpretation.
Absolutely.
So let me give context to all the content you put in your brain. That's gigantic. But our leadership need changes to a Sherpa guide who's walking up this mountain. You can walk up without me. In fact, probably better than me because you're younger. But let me give you the guide that helps you know where the rocks are and the snakes and everything else. So that worldview is just gigantic. Another first, this is the first generation that enjoys external stimuli at their fingertips 24/7.
Yeah.
And again, that may not be the end of the world, but if you think about it, if they've always got stimuli coming at them and there is no quietness, maybe, I always want clutter, I always want noise, will my kids grow up in a world where they always need outside stimuli to get them going? Will they ever develop internal motivation to get going? I hope so, but I might have to go after that and develop it by saying, let's fast from technology for a day.
Absolutely.
Just to try it out.
Yeah.
So one more. This is the first generation that we adults have actually unwittingly enabled to be narcissistic. Dr. Jeannie Twenge, who we have interviewed on this podcast, has done some groundbreaking research into the narcissism of college students today. She says every time they benchmark this study, every 3 years, narcissism just keeps going up in students.
No.
Now, I always want to say that doesn't mean they're wicked or evil. They're great kids, but somehow we've created a world thanks to social media and parenting styles that have told them they're awesome just for putting the fork in the dishwasher, that we may need to get them ready for a world where they're not getting praise or they're not the only smarty pants in the room as they go off to Georgia Tech and there's 20,000 other smarty pants. You know, you know what I'm saying? You can imagine that could be a gigantic wake-up call producing quarter-life crises, you know, where I'm scared now because this is a different reality than mama created at the house.
Absolutely. That's huge. So. That's huge. Okay. So let's move on to our third insight, and that is about communication. So communication is huge, and we know that communication is changing, especially how adults, people from Gen X and boomers are trying to relate with millennials, and then even with Generation Z as they're coming along. So I wonder if you could speak some to how communication is changing. I know we use a lot of images here at Growing Leaders, but how else is communication changing and does it need to change?
Yeah. Let me just give you a couple of thoughts on this, and then I'd love for you to volley back because you, as an emerging generation leader, may need to say, I wish my teachers would have, or I wish my employer would. That would be helpful. So I'd love to volley right back to you. A couple of thoughts. One is I think we, the adult generation, need to be careful to not get frustrated that we might need to communicate the why before the what. We have been so good at offering prescriptive communication. Here's exactly what you need to do. Bam, 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 bam. And we wonder why these kids are revolting or rebelling against our what. But really, I think they might do it if it's a good idea. Can you tell me why that's important? So the math teacher might need to say, let me take 5 minutes before we jump into this equation. Let me tell you why this is so important for you to know. Let me explain why understanding budgets and finances is so important for you when you're 30 or 25. Yeah.
That's great.
Well, you and I both know, once I learn why, I'm much more on board with the what.
Absolutely.
But I think we might need to take time to do the why, and sometimes we're not good at that. Mm-hmm. That old school coach on the football field may say, dadgummit, just do what I tell you to do.
Because I said so. Right?
Yeah, because I said so. Exactly.
Yeah.
So here's one more little nugget, and then I want to hear from you, Andrew. I think we need to communicate the heart before the head. Now, the head is very important. We need to be logical, rational people like all we always have wanted to be. But I actually think there is something that makes our communication stand out and be differentiated from the other thousand messages they're getting every day if we speak to the heart, not just the head.
Absolutely.
So when I communicate, I want to share the research behind this great nugget I'm about to share. But I want to speak to the heart as well. And maybe I give them a point for their head and a picture for their heart. Here's a story. Here's the narrative. Or here's a story from my own life. This is a heart story on why I had to learn budgets when I was 21. Or I had to learn that geometry that I didn't want to learn in 10th grade. So again, I think those are just two points we try to communicate in this book. Here's how to really effectively connect with those kids. And so I'm very excited about this new version of IY. But talk to me real quick. As a millennial yourself, what would you add to that list of communication tips?
I think number one for me is practicality. I definitely felt, especially as I was walking through my college years, that when I walked out, I had a rudimentary understanding of the liberal arts, but not a practical understanding of when people want that knowledge from me and in what ways they do. And you mentioned the word hack a lot when you're talking about Generation Z. And I feel like that's so much a part of the millennial culture. Even today with the large amount of millennials who are entrepreneurs and who have desire, you know, they're selling stuff on the side on eBay while they're going to their day job. And I felt like for me that I would have really appreciated getting extra help about how things applied. And you mentioned that a little bit, talking about a teacher telling a story or sharing their heart. And that builds authenticity, but I think it also gives students a more practical approach to what life is like. Because, I mean, I grew up in public school. I was assessed by how well I could take a test. And the reality is that didn't, that was no connection at all
to the world,
to how I was assessed when I got into my first job and what it would take to be successful there. So that's probably the biggest thing for me.
Makes sense.
I think I went through a quarter life crisis of a sort. You already mentioned that topic and it was really based on that.
Interesting.
I thought that there were things that were going to make me successful that didn't. And so I had to adjust my worldview in some ways as a professional and really develop out, okay, what skills do I have that other people actually want? Not that I think they want, but that they're actually going to, you know, pay me for or things like that.
You're right. It's a different report card, isn't it?
It absolutely
than the school report card. If I can volley back one thought, I have said for years that students learn on a need-to-know basis. So we want to be practical. Give me this if I'm going to need it. And really, I may not have incentive to learn it until I know I'm going to need it. So my good friend Sean Holtgren and I were talking on a recent trip, and we talked about this whole idea of need-to-know and learning. And it's the whole notion, and I think this is helpful. I think this is helpful, that we need to give students information just in time, not just in case.
That's
we're
great.
Often teaching just in case you need this. And they're going, I don't think I'll ever need this algebra.
Yeah, they put that away
because
they think, oh, that must mean it's not important.
And by the way, isn't it true today for us?
Yeah.
We will learn on a need-to-know basis. I got too much coming at me to remember everything. But if it's just in time, and so maybe we need to be better at timing and having our antennas up for those timely conversations that this student in a teachable moment is ready for. And we seize that moment, and it's a 5-minute conversation in a hallway, not a 50-minute lecture in a math class. We need to be on call. We are mentors for these kids. We're interpreting life for them. So
that's great. That's great. Very insightful. Okay, so let's move on to number four. So our fourth insight is, you already mentioned it, included in this book is a hugely important chapter on Generation Z, especially for those people who are working with the younger side of millennials. They may already starting to see some of those shifts. So I wonder if you could give us maybe the 1 minute and 30 second version or something of who is Generation Z? What do we know so far? We know there's going to be a lot more to learn in the future, but I wonder if you could speak to that.
Absolutely. Well, the early data is out on these kids. And by the way, some social scientists would say Generation Z started in 1995. That would be the earliest, I think, that we would say. Others say, no, it's right around the turn of the century. I frankly believe a marker was 9/11.
Yeah.
I think the mindset before September 11th, 2001 is different than the mindset we had after. We were more fearful as adults and parents, and the whole world was just became very uncertain. So I call Generation Z the kids born really after the turn of the century. And if you think about it, the first 15 years of their life were post 9/11, so terrorism has been a normal part of the everyday conversation. A salary economy is pretty much all they remember since 2008. The last 7-8 years, it's bad.
Yeah, my dad's losing his job.
That's right.
I don't know what's going to happen.
I can't get the iPhone right away. Yeah. So it's a little more uncertain than it was in the 90s. Think about it. Racial unrest has surfaced way more.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we have periods in the 60s it was bad. I remember those days as an early kid. But I think we, you know, from Ferguson to Baltimore to New York to Charleston to Louisiana, we have seen weirdness again. And I realize the reasons. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's real. These kids are growing up at a time where I don't know if there could be a shooting next week in the theater or the mall. And while we know it's not every day, it feels every day. It
certainly does.
So all I'm simply saying is these Generation Z kids are growing up in a far more uncertain world where I've got to figure this thing out. And it's not – my job is not assumed it's waiting for me when I graduate from school. It may not be. I watched my older brother, who's 28 now, looking for work when he got done with college, when mama said, oh, you're going to have 5 jobs. You know,
And, you're so smart.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think reality's hit. That's what I'm saying. And I think we might see a little bit of the cynicism that we saw in Gen X return.
Yeah, I was going to ask you
pessimism.
About that.
Yeah.
Are we going to see a return to that?
Maybe. Yeah. And, you know, my belief is there's an ebb and a flow. There's a pendulum swinging. The boomers were very anticipative, So were the millennials. The Xers were a little bit more pessimistic. So was Gen Z. So every other generation, we see the pendulum swing back and forth. We may need to get ready to give hope to these youngest kids.
And they're also, the population is smaller as well.
Yes, correct? You're right. Yeah, their siblings may be 0 to 2, not 2 to 4 at the house. And you know this, a lot of people are waiting to have children, mm-hmm. you know, who are 28 or 30, waiting to get married, or if they get married at all. And so, yeah, there's a lot of no kids situation. Now, my concern for us economically is you always need to replace the retiring generation. So that's a whole other podcast. But yeah, there may be there will be fewer kids on the horizon than we saw in the millennial generation, which had 80 million in it.
Yeah, that's very insightful. Okay, so the last thing I want to hit is one of the things I love that you've done in this book is that you have introduced story at every turn, because you're out all the time speaking to parents and students. You're getting feedback on the ideas that we've been talking about at Growing Leaders for a while. So I wonder if you could just share maybe one story with us about a student you've met.
Yeah. Well, my eyes are really on Gen Z now, which in many ways, as I mentioned, they still have IY realities in their life. But I met Carson on a road trip. Carson is 15 years old this year, so he's a freshman in high school. As I got to know him and then ended up sitting down and having a long conversation with him, I thought, here is my miniature focus group on Gen Z. So many realities that are a part of his world are normal for him, but would not be normal for his parents, certainly than his grandparents. Let me just give you a couple of for instances. Carson is pretty much bracing himself to hack his way through school. He's a new kid on the block in high school, so he's kind of figuring that out. One day he'll go off to college. He does want to go to college, but it may not be a four-year liberal arts college.
Okay.
Maybe I take a couple of classes at this liberal arts college. I might get a couple of free courses online from Harvard.
Mm.
You know, Ivy League schools are now offering MOOCs, massive online courses. So I think these kids, by and large, we're going to see more and more of, I'm figuring this out as I go, and I may not have Yale University on my resume. I might have a series of 6 things on that says I kind of hacked it through it, and here's what I've got under my belt now. I think we might see them working earlier, which I actually think is a good thing, by and large, because they're going to try to figure it out. They realize no one has a magic wand like my millennial brother thought, you know, the adults had in their hand. One thing that was interesting to note about Carson is many of his relationships were online. Now, that may not be a surprise to anybody listening, but I mean many. Like, he had never met his girlfriend face-to-face. It was a screen relationship.
Wow.
And so he's a screenager.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, we're doing great. We Snapchat and Instagram. So there's pictures. They have seen each other, but it's been on a screen. And then many of his friends were online or screen relationships. Some were global.
Wow.
In his life. So his friends weren't all in his hometown. They were in, you know, some other
country.
At
age 15, he's got friends all over the world.
Yes. Yeah. And he basically said to me in his own 15-year-old vocabulary that I find it easier to start and stop relationships on a screen. Wow. Now, that may be good news and bad news. Maybe we all need to get ready for that. But I thought to myself, oh boy, it is easier. You're right. But will his interpersonal skills be developed? Will his conflict resolution skills?
Yeah.
Can I just delete, unfriend, you know?
Or ignore
a text? Of course he can. And yet you and I both know that's not how really good relationships work. We make commitments, and I know I sound like the grandpa now, but we make commitments and we stick with them and we make sacrifices. So we may have to develop some timeless virtues that may not be getting developed on a screen.
Wow. Wow. That's huge. Well, we look forward to learning more about them and continuing to interact with them. Tim, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today. We thank you also for tuning in. We are very excited about the launch of this new book, and we want you to be able to get your hands on it. We have a new website for the book, for the launch, generationiy.com. Please, please, please go and check that out, because the great thing is it's not just a place to buy the book. It's actually a place to learn more about what we're talking about here. We have a new free web video series that Tim has done that's really, really insightful, things that you'll be able to share with your friends or on Facebook, really insightful little peeks into who this generation is. There's also some great quizzes on there mm-hmm. to figure out yeah. how well do I really know this generation that I yeah. think will be a lot of fun. And there's actually a special launch price right now for the book at $12.99. So that's a limited time price. So please, please, please head over there, check out that website, take a quiz, buy the book, and learn more about the millennials that you're working with. Tim, thank you again for your insights, for sharing with us, and for your leadership. We really yeah, appreciate it.
Absolutely. Andrew, thanks for being. I'm looking forward to having you on this podcast month by month because we'll be able to hear from an emerging leader in you. So thanks for hosting this thing.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, for listening in, and we'll see you next time.